The Real Reason for FDR's Popularity, a Mises Daily article by Mark Thornton. All presidents worry about their popularity. They try to bolster it through impassioned rhetoric, free stuff for influential voting blocs, new programs that cost billions, dramatic photo ops, and of course wars that unite the country behind their valiant leadership. In most all cases, they choose means of gaining popularity that come at the expense of liberty. But what if a president took a different direction and sought popularity by expanding rather than reducing liberty? There is a model here they could follow, but it's not one you have thought of. It's Franklin Delano Roosevelt. In his first 30 days, he did more to bring liberty to Americans than any president since Thomas Jefferson repealed the Alien and Sedition Acts. Roosevelt was inaugurated on March 4, 1933. After dealing with a banking crisis and the budget during his first week on the job, on March 13th, he called on Congress to repeal Prohibition. On March 23rd, he signed the Cullen-Harrison Act, which legalized the sale in the United States of beer with an alcoholic content of 3.2%. He wasted no time. He signed it one day after Congress passed it. He said with great elan, quote, "I think this would be a good time for a beer." Only then, on March 16th, did FDR begin to work on his New Deal agenda. Then he had the wind at his back. It was a dramatic beginning to the end of one of the greatest legal calamities in American history, the hated prohibition embodied in the 18th Amendment, which had been in effect for 13 violent years. Later that year, with the full support of the presidency, a new amendment to the Constitution repealed the old one. December 5, 1933, was the day of final liberation, following 9 months of frenzy and excitement. FDR successfully claimed credit for this, achieving a reputation as a great liberator. His popularity reached astounding heights. The glow never left. Never mind that he was president of the United States during the majority of the Great Depression, and then he dragged us into World War II when thousands of American soldiers were killed. And real per capita personal consumption didn't improve in the United States until after World War II. All was forgiven. In the same way that the voters forgave Reagan's spending and failure to keep his promises following his dramatic tax cuts. Most historians like to credit his New Deal for his popularity without considering what an amazing thing it was to have repealed Prohibition. He took office at the very lowest trough of the Depression, when unemployment was at its highest, and when banks across the country were closing their doors. Things did improve a little under FDR, but the economy remained mired in depression throughout his presidency. His vast increase in the size of government consisted of maintaining and expanding much of what Hoover had introduced, as well as many programs like Social Security, which changed the economy of the 1930s very little. In addition, many components of the New Deal did not work or were counterproductive to economic recovery, just as today we see with bailouts, stimulus, deficits, etc. Many Americans did strongly oppose those New Deal programs. Somehow, the historians have failed to credit his popularity to one of the greatest restorations of liberty in American history. The majority of Americans were drinkers, and the alcohol industry represented something like 5% of the overall economy. Prohibition had made alcohol much more expensive, harder to find, and generally of a much lower quality. In fact, because hard liquor is easier to conceal, Prohibition had turned Americans from beer to rot gut whiskey, which is, as the name implies, of a very low quality and often was dangerous to your health. While total alcohol consumption remained about the same during Prohibition as before, whiskey's market share rose from 40% to as high as 90%. FDR had been a dry candidate, but as he built his campaign for the presidency in 1932, he agreed to become a wet in order to receive the Democratic Party nomination at the convention in Chicago. He made a campaign promise to overturn the 18th Amendment and to legalize drinking. He did exactly what he promised to do. The result for liberty and economy were immediate. FDR also certainly gained an ally at Budweiser. Economist and prohibitionist Irving Fisher found that Prohibition had driven up the price of all classes of alcoholic beverage by several 100%. With repeal, the price of alcoholic beverages plummeted in what was, in effect, a giant tax cut for the American drinking class. Speakeasies were replaced with bars, taverns, and saloons. Distilleries, breweries, and wineries reopened and returned to their traditional businesses. Bottle makers, barrel makers, trucking companies, hop and grain farmers, and many other businesses began hiring and expanding their operations. It was hoped at the time to create as many as 500,000 legal jobs, even if most of the jobs in the black market economy were to be lost. In Milwaukee alone, an all-inclusive license was issued covering over 4,200 taverns. In addition, crime plummeted as crimes against prohibition vanished and prohibition-related crime dropped considerably. Corruption by politicians and law enforcement officials dropped considerably, but did not disappear because prostitution and gambling remained prohibited and alcohol would remain prohibited in several southern and western states by state law. The most telling statistic was the murder rate, which dropped from almost 10 murders per 100,000 population down to 5 murders per 100,000 population, where it had been before wartime and national prohibition. Even though repeal meant a big tax cut for drinkers and a big boost to the economy and jobs, it did have the disadvantage of providing a big increase in tax revenues for government. In much of the 19th century, taxes on alcohol provided as much as 20% of federal revenues. State governments also collected taxes and fees on the alcohol industry, as did county and city governments. In fact, a national prohibition on alcohol would have never passed until the Income Amendment passed in 1916 and provided an alternative revenue source. David Beito has brilliantly shown in his book, Taxpayers in Revolt, that Americans rose up against taxes in the early years of the Great Depression. People could not pay their taxes, and local governments could not afford traditional services. People arose across the country in group action to stop property tax collection. So in addition to pleasing the drinking class, FDR also opened up the revenue syringes from the customs house to your local bar and grocery store. Public school budgets went back into balance and firemen were rehired. This was a tax that people did not mind paying because the cost of a legal drink with taxes was still much cheaper than during Prohibition without taxes. This is the reason the tax revolts came to a screeching halt. Repeal was a win-win proposition. Imagine living during Prohibition when having a few drinks could jeopardize the family budget, when politicians and law enforcement were completely beholden to organized crime, when gunfire on the city streets was a common event, or I suppose you could just visit downtown Detroit. Then imagine almost overnight prices plunging, employers hiring, politicians and organized crime reeling, and crime dropping dramatically. Now, we may lament the end of those tax revolts, but the people must have relished the restoration of law and order and the return towards normalcy. In American political culture, what a president does in his first 100 days defines public attitudes towards him for many years. FDR's first 100 days are legendary for his bank legislation, his crazy programs, the Alcohol Adjustment Act, the NIRA, the TVA, the CCC, the regulation of stock markets, the confiscation of gold, his fear itself speech, and many other programs, all of which are recounted like a prayer for litany in a textbook. We tend to assume that this is the reason people loved him. The end of Prohibition is hardly ever mentioned, even though this is the one action that had a direct life-enhancing effect on every single American. This was the one thing that brought liberty and united the population in a collective shout of hurrah. The song Happy Days Are Here Again was FDR's campaign theme song, and now it is the Democratic Party theme song. But few remember that it was actually written for a movie to celebrate the imminent repeal of Prohibition. It isn't about government programs, it's about liberty. The repeal of Prohibition, then, is the real reason for FDR's popularity. The success of repeal gave him a tremendous amount of political capital that helped shield all his silly and dysfunctional programs of the New Deal. The truth is that liberty works for people and is very popular when tried. Likewise, the big government policies of Bush and Obama administrations are not popular, and once again, the people are rising in protest. We need to recall that what FDR did regarding prohibition was once seen as politically impossible. John T. Flynn, in his book, As We Go Marching, writes, quote, "Before the last war, when prohibition by constitutional amendment was proposed, it seemed the most fantastic thing in the world. But a little touch of crisis, a war crisis, and the thing was done with bewildering swiftness. Then men said repeal was impossible. It would never be possible to get the assent of 32 states. Clarence Darrow, the doughtiest anti-dry, said the hope was utterly illusionary. Prohibition, he said, would die by the dead letter route. Then came another crisis, the Depression, and the 18th Amendment vanished almost as swiftly as it came. Crises have a way of dissolving many things, often very old things, and sometimes very precious things." Robert Higgs is right that crisis usually leads to expansion of the state. It doesn't have to be that way. Someday, some politicians will discover the logic of liberty and usher in a new era of liberty-enhancing actions. So long as politicians and historians remain confused by the real source of FDR's popularity, they will continue to be befuddled for why we don't thank them for their socialism. We love them when they get governments off our backs.